Hey, this is John Lee Dumas of the award-winning podcast, Entrepreneurs on Fire, and you're listening to the Excelsior Journeys with George Soroy. Prepare to ignite.
So would you say that that's kind of like the lightning bolt moment for
you? And that's
why
I taught myself how to draw, was actually the Little Mermaid, drawing stills of Ariel.
I've got better things to do tonight than die.
Sylvester jumped out of his chair and said, who the F is this?
I remember walking out of the theater with him saying, I'm going to write Halloween.
I'm rather impressed with your research. Rarely do people ask me about Children in the Corn.
It doesn't have to be perfect. Just do it. You know, throw some spaghetti against a wall. See if it sticks.
This is George Soroy saying to all of you, ever upward. Welcome back to Excelsior Journeys, the road to creativity, part of the Podmatch podcast network. This is George Soroy, and thank you so much for being here. And one of the things that I really love putting the spotlight on is different authors that are really doing their part to make their mark in the literary world. And also to not only satisfy that creative outlet, but then also to indulge in other creative outlets as well. And that's something that we really, really celebrate over here at Excelsior Journeys, because it's always one thing that feeds into something else that may feed into something else. And in the case of Ryan McGinnis, it feels like everything is moving in a very synergistic way, because starting out as a frequent visitor to his local library, Ryan has read thrillers, sci-fi, horror, and really become inspired by those stories to eventually become a writer on his own and create various novels, as well as contributing to the world in other nonfiction pieces. And with his music abilities as well. One of the great things about having guests that are on this show is that they always seem to be looking over their shoulder to see the other people that are on their way and then providing some different resources to help them out. And that's what I've noticed that Ryan has been doing as well with his nonfiction writing and the different resources that he provides on his website. And I'm very, very excited for him for the upcoming, at this point, upcoming, but by the time you hear this, it will have been out. But his latest launch, the novel Terrestrial, so that way you can get it on paperback, you can get it on ebook. And I'm really excited to hear what the future has in store for Ryan. And so let's get right down to it. And we'll introduce our guest this week, Ryan McGinnis. Ryan, how are you, sir?
Hey, doing good, George. Thank you for having me.
And thank you very much for coming on. This is always a great thrill to chat with fellow authors, and especially those that have other creative outlets that inspire them and keep them going as well.
Well, thanks for having me. It's always good to be here and get to chat with other authors and stuff. And I've seen you've been doing a lot of podcast work, and so I think that's awesome. I saw that you're a best-selling international author. I saw mm-hmm. that you've been, you were the president of the Missouri Writers?
Missouri Writers Guild, yes.
Missouri Writers Guild. The word guild would not come into my brain, but yes, I've seen that. So very cool.
Yeah, they've been around for more than 100 years, and even though I was only president from 2017 to 2018, I hope that by when I left and handed it back to our previous president, that I had it in, that I was able to kind of keep it moving in a good way. So, yeah, thank you for mentioning that. I'm very, very proud of that time, and looking forward to seeing what else the Missouri Writers Guild has for us, because they're in very good hands right now.
Awesome. Yeah. That's very cool.
Now, tell us a little bit about Terrestrial. Now, that is, I love the cover art for one thing. It looks like there are a lot of different meteorites that are heading toward Earth. So, are those mm-hmm. meteorites? Are they? And can you tell us a little bit about what the story is? What listeners should expect to learn?
Yeah, Terrestrial is a story that was inspired. I'm a big fan of Kurt Vonnegut. And nice. And I think he was an amazing author. And he's one of the few authors that I'll go back and occasionally reread his work. And so I had been on a binge where I'd went back and read Cat's Cradle and Slaughterhouse-Five back to back. And it kind of inspired me, because I had been writing at that point, I think my second book was out and my second novel. And they were all at that point had just been like spy action thrillers, kind of like John Wick meets James Bond. And I was inspired by Cat's Cradle, which is one of my mm-hmm. favorite books of all times. to kind of try to come up with some kind of science fiction angle, some kind of sci-fi thriller. The idea, the very first idea, and I put this on my social media for this book, was I had, my wife bought me this little sketchbook that was like a, laid out like a comic book, like comic book panels.
Oh,
kind
cool.
of doodle your own comics into it.
Yeah.
And so I had drawn a meteorite flying through space. And then I showed a city in the second panel. And in the third panel, the meteorite hit. And then there was a hole. And in the fifth panel, you see these vines coming up out of the hole. And that's all I ever did with it. It was just something I was just sketching one day when I was sitting around bored. And
oh, wow.
and that was kind of the first inkling of what this book was going to be. And so, but sadly, as an author, when you're working on a series, you get hung up. Like you're like, there's other stuff you want to write, but
yep.
but you got to put out the next mm-hmm. one in the series. And so I've been
all
hung up
well.
On that for quite a while. Yeah. I've been hung
all
up
too
on
well,
that for
all
quite
well.
A while. And it's like, every time I would put out a book, I'd be like, man, I need to do Terrestrial next.
Mm-hmm.
But then I would be like, but I need to do this other book. And I just keep going. And so Terrestrial, originally, when I first did a synopsis for it, I did a synopsis for it way back in 2021. And mm-hmm. the synopsis that I had written was very, had Kurt Vonnegut's fingerprints on it, because it was a lot more humorous and it was a lot more kind of absurd and it had a different feel to it. And when I let it sit for a while and I came back after a couple books and reread the synopsis, I was like, okay, I'm going to tear some of that out and make it more serious and make it more modern instead of having a throwback feel to it. And so I developed it. I started writing on it. So I wrote The Silent Death, which was the last Xavier Green novel that I've written. There's going to be another one coming. And that's the first time I've made that announcement anywhere. So there is a new Xavier Green book coming. I saw a review the other day. A guy in the UK had read all of those books and he was like, I hope to God there's another book coming. So to that guy out there, yeah, there's another book coming, but I wanted to get Terrestrial out of my system first. And because the thing with it was I'd written The Silent Death and promotion for that didn't go the best in the world. I booked a bunch of podcasts. I was on several podcasts or recorded for podcasts, but all the podcasts went out of business before they aired my episodes.
Oh.
So I lost like everything.
Oh. Well, you don't have to worry about that here. You don't have to worry about that here because this show, because I'm too damn stubborn to let this show die. So it's that's just me. Like I got the run of the show. I'm the one that gets to say whether or not it keeps going. And as long yeah. as there are episodes that have been recorded and interviews that have been made, those recordings, those interviews, they will see the light of day. So
I've done Silent Death. The marketing kind of fell apart. You know, Silent Death came out really late because we had some health scare with my wife, but that ended up being okay. So I wrote Silent Death and yes, thankfully. And the promo, the marketing and promo for Silent Death, like completely goes off the rails and that's fine. I was like, okay, fine. But I decided maybe I'll take a break from Xavier Green for a while and maybe I'll finally write Terrestrial. And so I go in and make some changes to the outline because I see a lot of people talking about pantser versus plotter, whether
yeah.
you write outlines or whether you just make it up as you go along. I'm very much a plotter. I will have an outline of how the book's going to go before I start. But at the same time, while I'm writing the book, things will change and I will change the outline as I go. So I'm kind of both. I mean, yeah. I'm very much an outliner, but once I get that framework, I'll play a lot within that framework. The first chapter was this guy getting ready for work. He's thinking about the secretary that he's got a crush on and he's thinking about what she's going to be wearing today. Maybe he'll finally ask her out and all this stuff. And he gets in his car and he drives. And at this intersection, he gets hit by the meteor. Right. And that's the end of that character. And that's the end of the first chapter. That was going to be the original first chapter. And
yeah.
I took that out because I was trying to make it more serious and more modern, go for a more thriller approach to it. And
yeah.
and instead, I put in a first chapter, which is the International Space Station. And they see these meteors. And that's sort of the first, like, they're like, oh, my God, those are actually hitting the ground.
Mm-hmm.
And then that just kind of sets off the rest of the book. And I've written like the first 5 chapters of the book. And then we had the election. And I don't want to get too into any of that. But,
yeah.
but the election was a real bummer for me. And so I kind of crashed out for a while and didn't write anymore. I was like 5 chapters into the book and I just didn't write. And I went on like some side quests, to use a Dungeon Crawler Carl reference. I went on some side quests and did some other stuff. And for a while I was like, man, I don't know if I'm going to write again. But But I went through, I can't remember where I saw it, but I saw an author write about the fact, he was talking about the fact that, I was telling my wife, the excuse I was using was, it's just too chaotic. I can't write because there's too much chaos. And I found this blog, or it was on social media. I can't remember where I saw it, but it was an author talking about the fact that authors have to write during chaotic times because it's how we process stuff. And if you don't write, then you're driving yourself crazy. Yeah. And I thought that was really impactful.
And not only that, but you're also providing the means for someone else to get some escape from the chaos. So you're doing yourself a favor while doing someone else a favor. So it's a mutually beneficial setup. And that's why at the end of every episode here, I always say, in these crazy times, we need your vision, your stories, your ideas now more than ever. And that's something that I need to kind of remember for myself. In fact, like, I think at this point with my sci-fi sports trilogy from Parts Unknown in the works right now, it's in editing. That's what my t-shirt is for. But the seeing the layout that they have for the UFC octagon at the White House, I'm just like, damn, I better hurry up because current events are gonna make that's what the sci-fi section of bookstores is gonna be called now. It's just gonna be called current events.
The biggest obstacle I face is that voice inside my head that rears up sometimes and tells me, you don't matter. Nothing you say matters, nothing you write matters, nothing. And I've had a lot of bouts with depression, and that voice, if anybody out there is hearing that voice is a liar. Everything you say matters. Yeah.
I hear it too.
Yeah, absolutely. But to anybody out there, your voice does matter, and everything you say matters because somebody's watching somewhere, especially if you're an author. And so I'd heard that. And then also, once again, Kurt Vonnegut comes back into the picture because I was reading an interview with him that had shown up in my newsfeed. And he was talking about, this is from back before he passed away, but he was talking about how if you don't like the world as an author, you have a unique opportunity. You can write books. You can change people's minds with the ideas in your books and without beating them over the head with it. But it's kind of like, put your worldview out there, and it's a way to affect the world. And so those two things kind of helped me get my head on straight. And I started writing Terrestrial again. And I'm like, at this point, I'm 9 chapters into the outline. I decide, oh, it'd be cool. I can think of some really cool stuff that could happen if I flesh out the International Space Station instead of that just being the first chapter. What if I kept like a parallel narrative going the whole book with the space station? And so I wrote an outline of like I basically wrote another short book and just integrated those two plot lines together to make a book. And this is my longest book. I think it's the longest book I've ever written, which is not to say that it's very long, but it's longer than the Xavier Green thrillers that I was doing. Those end up being, I think, 60,000 words, somewhere in that range. And this book's like, I think 78,000 and probably pushing 60 chapters or something. My wife was like, when my wife read it, she was like, damn, this is a long book for you, but it's good. She enjoyed it. But so finally getting around to it, you asked me what Terrestrial is about. Terrestrial, a series of meteorites impact North America. And I kept it to North America instead of worldwide, but for reasons that will be revealed in the book. But meteors hit Canada, the United States, Mexico. We primarily deal with the United States in this one. And the trick is the meteors crash and there's something in the meteors and it's growing. And I'm not going to go too far into that, but I will say a team of scientists are set into play to investigate it. But they're also like kind of capped in the knees by a very skeptical government who cares more about their poll numbers than they do what's actually going on.
Which is obviously fiction.
obviously. I mean, here's the thing. I wrote a character, the president in this book. He's not the main character or anything. He's just a supporting character. But the president in this book is President McGuffey. A throwback, like, well, as kind of a commentary on how we tend to, in the U.S. especially, we tend to worship celebrities instead of like scientists and teachers and people who actually know what they're doing. We're like, so McGuffey in this book was like, think of him like Bob Barker. He was like the game show host from The Price is Right. He ran for president as like just a marketing stunt. And then the front runner got caught up in a scandal and he ended up becoming president.
That's great.
And so there's this dude that doesn't really know what he's doing. Part of the reason I cracked out so hard is because we had an election, and this guy is not modeled after the current president.
No.
But then the current president came back into power, and I was like, ah, crap. And so I will say that I did change the character, modify the character in the book to kind of line up a little better. Like, it's parody, but it's not too on the nose. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. I made him a little meaner, a little more, like, originally he was just goofy. He didn't know what he was doing. Now I made him a little more vindictive, a little more anti-science, a little more my way or the highway. And so it kind of, I mean, it's still purely fiction. There's some satire in there, but
despite the fact that those changes seem pretty accurate.
Yeah, I mean, very isolationistic policy. Mm-hmm. And so he's kind of an antagonist to the scientist in the book because he keeps cutting their funding. He keeps pulling them off the project. There's all this red tape. And it's really what I try to show is that the scientist and the human element in this book are being handicapped because they're fighting amongst themselves and being held up by red tape, while the thing, the unnamed thing in the craters is not held back at all, and it's very unified in what it wants. And so that's kind of a subplot that I've got going in the book. But basically, it's a story of the people that are affected by the meteors, the scientists trying to work as hard as they can in very capped settings against this threat. And then it's also, there's the parallel narrative of the International Space Station, and I had to think about how to do this, gets struck by a meteor fragment. And the way that it gets stuck by a meteor fragment and not killed, not destroyed, is that the meteor actually hits a satellite and breaks apart. And so it's just a fragment of the meteor that hits the space station.
Oh.
And so the station's okay. It survives. But then they have the same problem as on Earth, because where the meteor has impacted the station, there is something in there. So now they've got this invasive visitor on the space station. And so you've got these parallel narratives of the people taking care of what's going on the surface. And then the space station, whose communications have been knocked out, are trying to deal with this thing on the space station, which is a very claustrophobic atmosphere. And the thing is very aggressive. And so you can see, like, I wrote it because I felt like there's a lot of tension in there.
It's just ratcheting up the tension. And that's something that a lot of people say about certain screenplays, that how the best way to really kind of create this wonderfully, this perfectly structured screenplay is for every scene in it to either create a new problem or add to an old one. And it sounds along those lines that what you're doing is, as you're jumping back and forth between the narratives, it is definitely showing tension ratcheting up with all of them. I think that's a great touch.
I had the Boron Hype, which is a blog that reviews, I mean, a lot of anime, but he also reviews my books. He started reviewing my books a while back, and he still does. And he actually had the review come out early. I was unexpected. Mm. That was an unexpected birthday present because it came out.
Nice.
It came out early, and so it's a very good review. But it talks about, I've got a quote pulled up over here just so I can say it. Trill employs McGinnis's usual parallel narrative structure to tell what feels like both John Wyndham's classic sci-fi novel Day of the Trivids and Daniel Espinosa's film Life at one time. That's a good, good comparison. He also, in his reviews, he mentions, in the review of the book, he mentions The Thing, which thank you for that, because I love John Carpenter.
That's great.
He also mentions, as far as the political aspect of it, he mentions, because it is a little bit of, there's a lot of political satire in there, and he mentions Don't Look Up, which was the Netflix film.
Oh, nice.
Film. And he mentioned
that is such a great film. I love that one.
I saw the ending of that came up on, I think it was on a Reels on YouTube Shorts or something. But I saw the end of that movie again. And it's such a, I need to go back and watch it again. I really liked it. Yeah. But also Shin Godzilla, which I'm like, thank you. So, I mean, so he mentions all that. I joked with my wife that I'm going to put out promotional stuff after the book comes out and say, come for the sci-fi thriller, stay for the political satire.
There you go. And that is definitely a quote that's worthy of slapping on the front cover.
Because of the reduced, I kind of worked on a tight time frame here, because like I said, I'd had problems, and I kind of had to push myself into writing this novel. So we worked on a shorter time frame. So the first versions of these books to come out will not have any of the quotes on them. I usually put quotes on the back, like with the blurb. The first versions of these won't, but I'll add it later. That's the beauty of self-publishing, is that you can just add that later.
And you could also,
yeah, I was just on too short of a time.
You can also put that in to say like a book trailer, something to kind of put that out there, because that kind of review, those kind of references, that's too tough to pass up. I would have jumped right into that. But you did mention the original idea for chapter one to be the other, this other random person who you think is going to be the main character and then gets squished right at the very end of it, which I think is brilliant. Now, did you do anything with that chapter since you didn't use it in the actual book, or like you didn't delete it, did you?
No, I've still got it. It's still in my notes, but I mean, I never actually wrote it out as a full chapter, but I had the outline of it, but I haven't done anything with that. And that's actually, it's a narrative trick that I used before. The first book I ever wrote, Tears of the Dragon, was my first novel. It was the first Xavier Green action thriller. And I do something similar in it, in that there's a character you follow in the first chapter and you think they're the main character. And they're really not. They're really one of the bad guys, because the book's been out for like 5 years now. So I don't think I'm spoiling anything. But the character in the first chapter is actually one of the bad guys, and he gets killed at the end of the chapter, and then the real main character shows up. Nice. So it's a narrative trick I've used before.
So it's like a nice nod.
Yeah.
I would recommend, I actually think that it'd be pretty funny to shoot this as like a little short film or something, or just as
that would
a trailer.
Be fun.
And have him just have this main character just kind of go through it and everything, and just thinking like, oh, this is going to be a good day. Oh, I should ask her out. Oh, I should do this. I should do that. And just kind of have, and then just like all of a sudden looking up, and there's like this meteorite that just all of a sudden just zooms right in and cuts to black. And then you can have on there just saying like, there's the title of your book. And then you put in the quote, the quote from that reviewer that flooded you with the very, 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 very complimentary references. So
that would be fun. I could also do a lead magnet with it. I could write like an extra chapter, like from a different point of view. Always keep your creative stuff. When you come up with ideas, always keep them.
That's what I always said. That's why I said that to my daughter, because she like decided to abandon a book that she was working on so that way she can start another one. And I said, that's fine, but never delete it. Never write over the document that you got, because you never know what sort of nuggets are going to be available to you with that.
Yeah.
So that's one thing that I love hearing about, is what I call the road to creativity. And that's when someone reads something or experiences someone, meets someone, and just says like, ooh, that's what I want to do. That's the kind of life I want to live. And then all of a sudden, whatever road they're on, they just hit that exit ramp. They merge into traffic. They're on this whole other road, but it's the road that they feel that they should have always been on. Now, for writing yourself, now you were a big reader of the stuff that you write now, right? Like from the library?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. So when I was young, I grew up, I had two working parents. So I got dropped off at preschool. I didn't like preschool. And then once I got into school, the school was right down the street from the library. So a lot of times my mom would be like, when you get out of school, walk up to the library and stay there, and then I'll come meet you. I'll come pick you up.
Great.
And so I spent a lot of time by myself as a very curious, very driven kid, just combing around the library and finding all these science fiction books because that's what I'm going to naturally gravitate toward. I mean, I read like nonfiction books about dinosaurs. Like when I was a kid, I knew everything about dinosaurs. I mean, had those little plastic dinosaurs. You got like 40 dinosaurs there. my parents would buy me nonfiction books about dinosaurs because that's just all I wanted. I devoured that. But then I also read a lot of like Ray Bradbury and stuff like that, and a lot of ghost stories and just all kinds of weird pulp stuff that I could find and just bizarre science fiction. Mm-hmm. And I just thought it was awesome.
Yeah,
so that was kind of my bang. And then you grow up and you kind of leave that world behind. And I sidetracked into music and played music for a long time. I was in a punk rock band that got pretty big and regionally, and we actually got to play on the Warped Tour, which was kind of fun. I left that band in 2005 and got married, moved to the suburbs, and that lasted a couple years. And then I started like an online music zine to support the Charlotte, North Carolina, like underground music scene. So I did that for a few years. And somewhere in there, my wife was like, I would always come up with all these ideas. I'd always have all these ideas. And my wife was like, why don't you try writing some of this stuff? And I'm like, oh, I don't know. I never thought about that. I was running my own business and doing music stuff, and I didn't think about writing. And so I actually did. I like to joke about that and say that behind every good man is a woman telling him to get off the couch.
Yes.
Because my wife was very much like, go out there and do something. And and so I wrote a lot of outlines and synopsises, and most of them have never been written. Like I have like an entire file folder just full of all these ideas. Some of them pretty planned out like outlines that I just haven't made into a book yet. That's the thing. Terrestrial was, I came up with it in 2021 and it just been sitting in a file. And I finally was like, all right, let me pull this outline out and do something with it. So I'm absolutely with you. Like if you come up with a creative idea, write it down. And just because you're not working on it right now, keep it, because you don't know when you're going to pull that out of your pocket.
Yeah.
Cause I've got a ton of stuff. I could write books from now until the day I die and still have ideas because I've got such a backlog to start with. And it's just, I did the Xavier Green thing, which was only supposed to be it was originally only supposed to be one book. And at the time, all the advice that you get from all the gurus was, oh, you got to have a series. You got to have a series. You got to have a series. And I do like, there's several series that I follow or used to follow. Some of them I don't anymore, but I was like, okay, I could do a series. I'll have my own protagonist and he'll be kind of like John Wick, James Bond, but also kind of like, what's the guy? Agent Pendergast. He shows up in the book, The Relic. And then like a whole series after that. There it is. Douglas Preston and Lincoln Child. It's a series. It started with the book Relic, which was actually made into a movie, but they completely removed Pendergast from the movie, which is weird because he was the main character. And it's this whole, he's an FBI agent, but it's sort of like, he gets in all these like weird, like it's very weird books. Like it's not like normal FBI stuff. There's like some killer that's supposed to be like eternal or something. He's supposed to be like 200 years old or there's like a monster, or it's kind of like X-Files meets like FBI kind of stuff. And I've never went that direction with the Xavier Green series. I kept it more straight up, you know, espionage, spy, John Wick type stuff. But I only meant for that to be one book. There was another book series that I thought about doing. Back then, I didn't really know genres, so I was just writing stuff. But there was another series. I've never even touched that. I've got like three outlines for like several books that are just sitting there in a file folder. Someday I'll get to it.
No, I know exactly what you mean. Because like back when I was in grade school, my friends and I created these characters and they were just as rudimentary as you can get. Like they were like a square head, a rectangle body. It was like all these robotic type of characters. And I mean, I grew up in the 80s. So like I'm a 76 baby, but I grew up in the 80s. So I had robots galore like all around me. And so I wanted to kind of throw my own hat into that race. So my friends and I would just create these characters in between assignments. And when I moved away, I brought those characters with me and I just kept on picking at them, just saying like, something's going to happen with these. I don't know what, but something's going to happen with these. And that little universe I just kept on picking at. And then finally in 1992, I created a character that was going to be like the centerpiece of it. And he is actually the main character in my YA sci-fi trilogy. And now it's just like, I don't know how they're going to be presented in this idea that I have for them, because Excelsior, my main guy, like he's now the one to set the table for these other guys.
Yeah.
And so instead of Excelsior coming later, he's actually going to be the first one. And then after his trilogy, it's going to lead into a series of what I consider middle grade novels. So they're going to be like much, much smaller, like about 40,000 words or so.
Yeah.
And the object of those is basically just to have some more condensed stories that are constantly moving the main story forward. But and that's something that got my agent's attention. And that's what made her want to be my agent. So, but that's like still several stories away. I don't know, like, what the overall feel is going to be with that, but I know exactly what you mean.
That's great. That's great. I mean, I've never tried to get an agent. I've never tried to get a publisher. I did everything myself because I come from the independent music scene. And a long time ago, when I was in the band, we had a record label. It was an indie label that picked us up. There was a time in like the late 90s where all the bigger labels started buying up all the indie labels, and a lot of the indie labels went out of business. Well, our label went out of business. And so we were kind of left high and dry, but we had a lot of listeners. And so we were like, well, let's just do our own record label. And so we started our own record label. We did our own flyers. We did our own phone calls, like all the promo, all the booking, the website, like back when websites, in the ancient days of websites, we're doing websites. Like
GeoCities, yeah.
Right, and doing our own records. And so I just grew up just very DIY. Very do it yourself.
Well, you said before that you were in a punk band. Like that's pretty much like the style of punk anyway. Punk is DIY. Yeah. That's just kind of fitting.
Well, and I was very inspired by, I remember Henry Rollins, who I've seen a bunch of times.
And Black
Henry
Flag.
Rollins started he started he started publishing his own novels back in the day, back when it was way harder. You know, he just created his own publishing name and just like start putting books out. And I'm like, well, if he can do it, I can do it. I mean, you look around all these other people. I mean, a lot of big authors have gotten their start as self-published authors. And so, I mean, the tools are all there nowadays. Yeah. I like to talk about the bar for entry has been lowered, both in music and in books, that you can do so much stuff yourself and do it at a very high quality.
And that's the main thing, because too many people are thinking of just getting it out there. You got to be, if everyone is going out at the same time and making it very, very difficult for anyone to be really picked out of a crowd, quality has to be one of the X factors that's going to get that attention that you need.
Right. Yeah, you have to work really hard to get attention nowadays. I mean, it's incredibly difficult because the bar is lowered. It's easier for everybody to actually do the creativity, which is good for artists, but it also floods the market. And so you have a harder time standing out. And so you have to work harder. You have to do podcasts. You have to do stuff on social media. You have to do stuff to try to make yourself stand out. And it's hard. There's nothing easy about it. If anybody out there is thinking about it and they're like, is there an easy way to do it? If you're going to do it easy, stay home.
Yeah.
If you're not willing to do the hard work, don't do it.
Right.
Because if you're going to do it right, it can be very hard, but it's also very worthwhile.
Absolutely. And so do you have, even though you're doing everything yourself, you do have a team though that's working with you, right? You have cover artists, you have editors, you have beta readers, things like that.
Yes. Well, I do have editors and I have beta readers and ARC readers. This time beta readers got skipped and we went straight to the ARCs because like I said, I pushed myself. I was like, I set a deadline and was like, this is when I want this book out.
Yeah.
And so it was a very short time frame and we had the holidays in the middle of it. So I was like, we're going to skip the beta readers and just go straight to the ARC readers. No, as far as cover art, my day job, I own my own business and I do websites and I do graphic design and I do marketing and SEO and stuff like that. And so every book I've ever done, I've done the cover. Like the cover Terrestrial, that's me. Yeah, I did all that. So I've always done all my own covers. Not that I'm not open to somebody else doing a cover, because that's cool, but if it saves me money, if it saves me money and I can do it and it looks good, then why not?
That's a critical thing right there, because there are a lot of people that want to go ahead and make the cover art themselves, but you have the experience, you have the knowledge, you have the tools, you have the resources, you have what works, and the fact that you've worked in marketing as well as design, that's a great 1-2 punch right there, because not only do what works for the market, but you also know how to make it work for you.
Right. I don't always feel like that. If I'm being honest,
I totally get it. But when you have that vision board and you're looking at all the different projects that you have on your plate that you still need to finish or you're still going to be mulling over, you got to have a mirror board right next to it, because you got to remind yourself just how far you've come.
I mean, it's so much easier, I find it, to market other people's stuff than to market my own stuff. And I think that's because we grow up being told not to brag and to be humble and don't talk about stuff. But when you're a self-published author, you have to talk about stuff. And so you have
you
to kind of get over
point.
That.
Right, you do to a point, but because like the great thing about being an indie author around this time is that you have the opportunity to hook up with so many other people. So now you're not saying buy my book, buy my book, buy my book. You're saying buy his book, buy her book, buy their book.
Yeah.
And they will be doing the same for you. And all of a sudden you have this collage of different people that are working alongside you. and they're pushing your book just as much as you're pushing theirs.
Yeah. Yeah. It's always good. You got to have your community. Your community that when I get one of the continuing things, it's hilarious, but my author copies, I always get my author copies at the last possible minute. Like, I guess just because of sometimes I'm running the last book, Silent Death, I got them like a month ahead of time, which was amazing. But I had a guy like 2 months ago who was like, "Hey, do you got a copy of your book I can see yet?" And I'm like, "Dude, are you kidding? I don't have a copy of the book yet. I'm an indie author. I'd be lucky." I have a friend of mine that lives in a big city. He lives in DC, and he can order, because when you order author copies, if you order them through KDP, you don't get to use Prime. You don't get to use your Prime shipping. Like it ships slow, like super slow. And so he orders his book. He almost always gets his book before I actually get my author copies. Because living in a big city, he'll just order it and he'll have it like 2 days later. It's like at his house. And it doesn't help that I won't say far from civilization, because I mean, I do live in a city, but I live at the very southern tip of Texas at the Mexican border. And now they are building an Amazon distribution center about 2 miles up the road from my house. So hopefully that gets quicker. I joke with my wife that in the future, I want to be able to order stuff and just tell them I'm going to come pick it up. I'm just going to come drop by the center and just pick it up. You
know? How great would that be, too? Just one.
It'd be awesome. I mean, like, I'm just going to drop by and just pick it up. Yeah. You know?
One less step to worry about. Just get over there, pick up your bulk order and move on. And you got.
The power of community and having people to support you, that is like super, super valuable. Yeah. I've been lucky enough to have a very supportive wife on this whole thing. I don't think the dog's very supportive. I think the dog would rather I be petting her than riding, but she tolerates it. And to have friends and to have friends in the book world to help me with stuff. You know? Mm-hmm. So yeah, it is very, very incredibly important. Like no man is an island, even a self-published author. You know, you need other people to help you. So
yeah,
absolutely.
That's something that too many people really need to remember, is that, just like you said, no one does it alone. It may be the phrase may be self-publishing. There's so much more to it than that. Yeah. I prefer indie publishing. I think that's a better way of going about it. And it doesn't have that stigma that too many people remember from the days before Amazon. Because that was, you want to talk about a dark time for the rebellion. Like that time was brutal. And I remember having a book out there in the marketplace that I self-published through iUniverse. And,
oh, wow.
Yeah. You ask me if I have my scars. Oh, yes, I have my scars. to quote Brushy Bill Roberts, that's definitely something that I remember very, very vividly. And thankfully, that time is not as, it may still be around, but it's not as frequent as it was, thankfully.
Yeah. Well, I tend to use the term indie author instead of self-published author a lot of times. I mean, I did use self-published today, but it comes from being a musician, because we weren't self-published musicians. We were indie musicians. We're independent musicians. And I mean, even nowadays, I mean, I put out my books. There's an imprint on the back of it. And if you look at on the Amazon KDPs, it's when it says publisher, it says 217 Press. Mm-hmm. And 217 Press is just me, but I put that on there because if a lot of people see that it's just self-published, they're not going to read it. But if they see your company on there, and that's something I learned a long time ago, back in the 90s, before I was in the band, when I was just first doing music, I used to make my own cassettes. Like I would record music on a home studio and then make mass copy them, get one of those, like, I don't know if you've ever seen the machines, but there's a machine where you can put like 10 cassettes in, and you put one cassette and you hit play and it records, and it just mass records, duplicates cassette. And so I used to do that. I would get labels printed and like stick them on the cassettes and would make the cover myself. And even back then I was like writing, I would have my little logo for my little label. I can be doing the air quotes, but I'm doing air quotes, my label, you know, put on the cassette. And then it's always been that. It was us when the record label got pulled out from under us back in the day. I mean, we were like, let's make our own record label. And it really was just, we filed a copyright on a logo, and that was basically it. I mean, we ran it out of our apartment. So it's always been just like, make yourself look like, and that's advice. That's advice to anybody out there that's writing. make yourself look bigger than you really are. Mm-hmm. Give yourself a publishing label. It's not silly. You might feel silly doing it, but it's not. It's good advice. Make your own publishing house. Make your own, just so people are like, oh, okay, this guy's got the backing of this publisher. And it's like, well, the publisher is me. I am the publisher.
You have your backing though. That's
right. Exactly.
At the end of the day, you are investing in yourself. And that's something that too many people tend to overlook. I did something similar when I started in audiobooks, because the first book I narrated was my own. I reached out to my publisher, who was a small press based out of St. Louis, and asked her if I could record the audiobook for it. And she said, well, let's see how the first chapter sounds. I recorded the first chapter, sent it over. She loved it. She gave me the green light to go ahead and narrate the whole thing. And after that happened, that's when I started looking at reaching out to other authors and seeing maybe I can narrate their books, and got a handful of people that I was able to set up through ACX's royalty share program. And now I'm charging I'm not a full-time audiobook narrator, but I have more than 20 titles under my belt, and the majority of them.
Oh, congratulations on that. That's something that I am just getting ready to kind of dabble in, because I wanted to take some of my old works and kind of work them in and do. I was inspired by this guy. Can't remember his name off the top of my head, but he did Dead America. In fact, let me just reference that while we're talking about it. He does Dead America, which is, he writes a series of short novels, but he does them on, Derek Slatton. I first encountered him on Joanna Penn's podcast, and he has a series of short books called Dead America. And it's like this really long series, but it's all very short books. And he started turning them into a podcast, like serialized fiction podcast on YouTube.
Nice.
And he makes enough money that he's a full-time author now doing that. And so
that's awesome.
So I've been looking into maybe dabbling it, because I'm a dabbler. Like, I mean, you reading off everything that I was doing, and I'm incredibly busy, and you're not wrong, but I'm a dabbler. I will always find something else that I'm like, oh, that's fun. And I might just piddle with it for a month or two and be like, okay, yeah, that's not for me. I just wanted to try it.
But
I am going to probably set up a recording studio. I'm going to set up a little recording studio in my closet, and I'm going to record like the first chapter or two of my book just to see how it sounds.
Nice.
And so I'm kind of dabbling in that, because I'm like, it's cool. Like, I'm thinking about it like, oh, I'm going to do this for myself, because it's like, I don't want to use AI voices, which Dead America does. Yeah. Dead America does use AI voices, but I understand his reasoning for it, because it budget conscious and time wise. But with me, I'm like, I would rather use a real voice, because I don't think the AI voices, they don't get the inflection right. It lacks a human quality. And I mean, someday it may not be like that, because I mean, the technology is moving forward at a wild pace. But I also think people are embracing it for the wrong reasons. People are like, hey, use this AI to do your art so you can do your boring job. I'm like, no, I would rather the AI do my boring job so that I can do the art.
Thank you. I've been saying that over and over again. Like, one of my favorite lines. I wish I could take credit for this, but the best statement that I've heard about AI is, I still don't know why I should be bothered to read a book that you couldn't be bothered to write.
Oh, absolutely. And some people will get the AI voice to read the book to them that you wrote with AI. And so at that point, I'm like, how many people, I mean,
it's like, you can see the six fingers like on each hand just by listening to it.
I'm going to get AI to summarize that book that you wrote with AI, because I don't have time to read it. So like, what's the point, man? What are you doing?
Just sucking the creativity out of everything. I just don't get it. And it's
just do it for the art of it, man.
It's just guzzling it down like the 5 million gallons of water that it's got to take every day just to survive. Like, that's
what you live in Missouri, right?
Sure.
Yeah. It's a major water problems. Mm-hmm. We're in a 3.5 year drought down here. And Mexico is obviously in a severe drought. Well, it's spread up to us now. And I'm telling you, man, we don't need to be wasting water, because water availability is going to be a huge crisis in the very near future.
So say there's someone out there that is in your position, that they have some skills, they know what they want to do, but they're not sure exactly how to apply it, whether it's for music or writing or artwork, whatever the case. They know they got something in them. They're not exactly sure how to bring it out. What is something that you would suggest to them that they try?
I would suggest, for one thing, if you've got multiple interests, and because I do, and my wife does, there's nothing wrong with you. That's actually a wonderful way to be. Have all those interests, because there are people that can't do stuff. If you can do a lot of stuff, cool. Just pick something that interests you and just push that one thing forward. Because once you start pushing that one thing forward, you'll start inspiring yourself and you'll get to the rest of the stuff. I read stuff to improve my craft. I recently read, and I did a review for it on my website, Pity the Reader, Writing with Style, on Writing with Style. That is a book by Kurt Vonnegut and Suzanne McConnell. And Suzanne actually wrote it, basing it on a 2-page article that Kurt Vonnegut had written years earlier, which was called On Writing with Style. And that book did so much. Like, I knew I was going to like it because I love Kurt Vonnegut. If you give me a book of Vonnegut quotes, I will just sit there and read the book.
Nice.
But yeah. I mean, he's one of those guys. I'm very cool with, like, for some reason, I've just always been cool. I understand the concept of life and death. And I understand the fact that when you get old, you die, and it happens. Mm-hmm. And sometimes people leave too early, and it's a tragedy. But when they're old, when I hear somebody died at age like 95, I'm like, well, they were old and they've lived a good life. But there are certain people that I wish could have skipped, like had the power to escape that. And Vonnegut is one, and like Groucho Marx is one. And because I just wish these titans were still here. Mm-hmm. Like I listen to them talk and I read their stuff, and it just makes me sad that there's not going to be any more from them. But I think find stuff to write or read to inspire yourself. Jeff Tweedy has a book called Write One Song. And even if you're not a musician, that's a really cool book because it gives you exercises to do to loosen yourself up and to write and to embellish stuff. And I think it's a great book, even for writers, even if you don't play music. The Pity the Reader, the Kurt Vonnegut, Suzanne McConnell book, is so good. Like, I was a fan of his, and so I knew the book was going to be good. I was going to enjoy it. But that book is so good and has such good advice. I'm telling you, George, it helped me. It improved me as a writer as I was reading it. Like, not as in, oh, someday I might use this, but as in, I had projects I was working on, and it made that short story I was writing better because I took advice from that book. And the next day when I went to that short story, I used it and I made it a better book.
Oh, that's awesome.
Stuff I read in there helped me editing when I was editing Terrestrial, when we were doing the edits on Terrestrial, helped me tighten the book up and make it a better book. So if anybody gets the chance, read that book. If you see Pity the Reader, definitely read that book because that is an awesome book. And I think that's it. I think it's inspire yourself, read stuff to get yourself inspired. But most of all, just start doing something. Pick one thing and start doing it, because once you do one thing and that thing takes off and you think it's like killer, it's going to inspire you to do the other stuff. I actually came up with a phrase the other day, and I'm going to tell you, I pulled out my notebook. I came up with something because I journal a lot, and this came out of it. Every once in a while, I'll have a thought, and I'm like, wow, that came from somewhere deep in my brain. I don't even know where that was. Mm. But it is this: curiosity leads to wonder. Wonder leads to joy, and joy leads to gratitude.
Mm.
And I'm like, that's like the golden rule right there, because the wonder and the curiosity will take you where you need to go.
Yeah. And where can my listeners find you on social media?
So if you go to my website, which is ryan-mcginnis.com, that's ryan-mcginnis.com. It's got most of my social media links. I don't have Threads on there yet, but the places I'm most active, I am on Facebook. I am Ryan. I think it's Ryan McGinnis Writer. I am active on Instagram. I am Ryan SND on there.
Excellent.
I'm also active on Threads. I'm probably most active on Threads nowadays. And that's also Ryan SND. I also have a YouTube page, and that's probably about it right now. I cut off TikTok. I cut off X. I'm not doing either one of those anymore. Don't do stuff. If you're an author out here and you're coming up and you're trying to do stuff, don't try to do everything. Do what's comfortable for you. You know, if you're not comfortable doing a podcast, don't do a podcast. George does really good on podcasts.
Thank you.
But you may not. It's basically Facebook, Instagram, and Threads. And then I have a YouTube page. And that's what I've got going on right now. So
nice.
And join my newsletter. I put out like one or two newsletters a month and try to provide value on them. Sometimes I succeed.
I will definitely be taking a look at that too, because I need to blow the dust off of my own newsletters, because I have a Substack that I started using and then I let it just kind of rust. So I need to get that going again, because I do feel that there is a lot that I need to focus on in order to get everything moving the way that it should. But I am going to be taking your advice on this. I'm going to be doing one thing. I'm going to choose what that one thing is. I'm going to get it done. I'm going to move forward. And that productivity, that completion will inspire me to get my ass in gear and get the next thing done. And the next thing,
because you
can only multitask so much. And I hope that those of you who have been listening know that what Ryan is saying is absolutely true. You take that one project, you take that one creative outlet, you move forward with it, you find success with it, whether it is financial or personal, mental, physical, whatever it winds up being, just so long as you have that feeling of accomplishment that you've done it, you've seen it through, you got into the end zone. Fantastic. Let's move on to the next one. So just keep on moving forward. Don't stop. And at the same time, don't let those voices in your head that are constantly lying to you win. Because if you do, then just like what it said before, the dream dies only when the dreamer says that it's dead. So that is something to definitely keep in mind. That is something that Ryan has been taking to heart for quite a few years now. And that is one thing that I truly hope that all of you do as well, because in these crazy times, we need your stories, your vision, your ideas now more than ever. So for Ryan McGinnis, this is George Soroy saying to all of you, ever upward, and I will see you next week.
Thank you very much for listening to this episode of Excelsior Journeys. I hope it was both inspiring and entertaining. Special thanks to Zach Comtois for providing new music for the intro and outro. Please take a moment to leave a rate and review on Apple Podcasts. And if you enjoy the show, please share it with your friends and subscribe to your platform of choice by going to heesgotit.com/podcasts. While there, you can also fill out the application to be a guest, inquire about sponsorship opportunities, and click on the Buy Me a Coffee link if you wish to give your support to the show. All interaction is very much appreciated. If you have a question, comment, or suggestion for the show, please direct it to George@heesgotit.com.